on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome to the Orient Hour. I'm joined tonight by Jamie Stripe. Jamie, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks, Billy. Good evening, everybody.
And our regular, our new regular, shall we say, Orient Comic. Orient, we're loving your work at the moment. How are you?
Thanks very much, Billy. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah, good to see you again.
I love the Lonely Hearts ad in the paper. That was my favourite so far.
Oh, thank you very much. I sort of feel a bit guilty about sometimes hitting Martin Ling with it all the time, but, you know, I think he's bit of an easy target at the moment, in the, you know, and it was all in good chest, wasn't it, you know?
Okay, so we had a game on Saturday. Do we want to talk about that?
Absolutely. Not really, no.
It was garbage, absolute garbage. I think the best thing that came out of the day was a comment on Twitter, which basically said that Orient would have been better off if we'd have driven up to Salford, placed the toilet in the middle of the centre circle, and then just driven home, because that was about how good it was. Do you feel cheated, guys, the fact that we all paid a tenner in case we needed to talk about it on today's show?
Yeah, I'm putting an invoice to Danny Macklin.
It would have been better going to charity, wouldn't it? No doubt.
Invoice is going straight to Andy Gilson for that match today, for the Orient Hour. So Andy, expect a bill in the post, mate. There we go. Okay, all right. So anyway, we ended up the season with a 3-0 defeat to Salford. We're not going to talk about it because it was rubbish. So end of the season then. So overall, how do we feel about the season, guys? OC, coming to you first.
It was a funny season on all levels, wasn't it? There's an element that mid-table mediocrity is perhaps what you want when you can't go to the games. You don't want to have the stress of a relegation battle. But equally, if we'd have done anything remotely exciting, we'd have all been sitting there thinking, oh, I wish I'd been in the ground to watch it, you know. So perhaps a season like it was, you know, bar a very brief sort of, I'm not even sure it was really a playoff push, but a sort of pseudo playoff push. Apart from that, it was very much mid-table mediocrity. And perhaps when you can't go and watch the games, that's what you want, isn't it? You know, so just a season to forget on all levels, really, wasn't it?
We sort of batted eyelashes at the playoffs a little bit, didn't we? And flirted with them, and then they sacked us off, basically. Jamie.
Yeah, they sort of swiped right on Twitter, didn't they? Really. It was a funny one, wasn't it? Because it was billed as a season like no other, really. And at one stage, you're kind of wondering, are we going to get through it? I mean, most of the talk was getting through COVID, getting through, you know, the cash crisis that was hitting the game. And, you know, slowly but surely, we did actually see a season kind of evolve. I think at the beginning of the season, with the squad we had, you kind of thought, you know what, if we crack the top 10, that's just about, you know, as good as this squad is. And I think it got proved right at the end, really. We had a little flirtation with the playoffs. Never really could crack that top seven. We had three opportunities in the new year. Couldn't do it. And I think at the end, we just kind of run out of steam. I think that the two games against Cambridge and Southend kind of illustrated it. When it came to the crunch, we couldn't step up.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The key points of the season, we didn't have the quality to make it count, you know. I think that's a fairly accurate reflection, isn't it? Did everyone really expect anything different, though? I mean, I must admit, I would have been happy with mid-table at the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, there was one point a bit before Christmas where I started looking at the bottom of the table a little bit, just because we went through a couple of sticky patches and had a few injuries to key players. And, you know, I mean, there was certain numbers going around particularly the expected goals sort of table that I saw going around on Twitter, that if it hadn't been for Danny Johnson's remarkable goal scoring record in the first half of the season, we could have been sort of right down the bottom. And I saw an expected goals table on a closing expected goals table on Twitter a couple of days ago. It must have been after Saturday's games. And it had Orient one place off the relegation zone. So I think it would have been very fanciful to expect anything more than what we achieved, really. And had it not been for having arguably the best keeper he is the best keeper in the division and certainly on his early season form, one of the best strikers in the division, Danny Johnson, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. So, I mean, if anything, I was looking down rather than up, and I'm happy with a mid-table finish, really.
Okay, so after the final game of the season, Joby McAnuff announced that he's retiring after 800 professional games, 20 years of playing. And we from the Orient Hour would just like to say a heartfelt congratulations on a stellar career to Joby McAnuff. He will always be the championship winning captain of the Orient that got us from non-league back into the Football League. And I would like to put on record our thanks from the Orient Hour, from Leighton Orient as a club, and just say what a fantastic professional Joby McAnuff was, and it was a pleasure to see him play in an Orient shirt. Jamie, anything to add?
Not really. I agree with everything you said. I'm sure everyone else at the club has got the same feelings. I think it was testimony to the guy's character. I mean, it wasn't an entirely smooth ride at Orient for him, and he came through three or four setbacks and led us to that great day when we were champions in the National League and back into league football, and it was a day that we'll never forget, and we'll be forever grateful for it. I'm just a little bit sad for him that it never quite came off as a manager for him. You know, it's just one of those things. But like I said, maybe we're looking in the wrong place when it comes to Orient's inability to get up. Maybe it's not so much the managers, but the actual playing squad wasn't up to it. But he's left some great memories, and I really hope he has a great retirement, and you know, still has a role in the game.
I think there'll always be, though, there's two iconic photos of Joby for me. One is when he's being held aloft by the fans with his hands in the air after being promoted. And the other is the one with Justin Edinburgh when they're celebrating together, having just the final whistle just gone. OC, any memorable moments for you?
I echo everything Jamie just said. As I've mentioned here before, I just absolutely love the man and everything about him. I'm really, really sad that he hasn't been given a manager's job full time. I really am. I watched the sort of extended interview with him the other day, and I was pretty much welling up, you know. And I mean, anyone could talk about his achievements as a player and what he's done as a man and the way people talk about him for his career. But one little anecdote I can give is where I took my little boy who's Orient mad. I mean, as I've said on here, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool Orient fan from back in the day. I only started supporting the club from when I moved to the area a few years ago. But my little boy is being brought up an Orient fan through and through. And I took him to the family day when would have been probably 2 years ago. And there's all the players were there. And the only player there that you'd say could have been perhaps a little bit look at me is Joby, because, you know, he's marked Lionel Messi, he's played in the Premier League, he's probably the only player that could have been a little bit flash, and he was the friendliest, nicest guy. He was the one guy that took my little boy to the side, was chatting to him about school, was chatting to him about what he'd done in his life and all this sort of thing. And I just think he's a remarkable man, and I'm just really sad that he's left the football club, to be honest.
Yeah, so on that note, the board announced that they would be not offering Joby McAnuff the role of the Leighton Orient manager, and they will be searching for a new man who has experience at League One and League Two level. All right, so OC, you've said you don't feel it's the right thing to do. Jamie?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I think there's a groundswell of opinion amongst the club's rank and file support this time round that they want an experienced manager.
I have an issue with this. All right. I don't want to cut you off here, but I'm going to, because I have an issue with this. My issue with this is that I personally think the board are being reactionary here with regards to the rank and file fans. And the reason I say that is this. I think the board have looked on social media and have reacted to the fans on social media. And of our fans that go to the ground, I would say possibly 10% are on social media, if I'm generous. That's like, and that's, so 10% would be 450. And I think I'm being very, very generous even saying that. Of those 450 who are on social media, how many are actually vocal? Maybe 100, 150. And I personally think, because we're not in the ground, I think the board would normally use fans live at stadiums as a gauge of how they feel about the manager. Because we're not in the ground, they can't do that. So personally, I think the board have actually made a judgment based upon the feelings of 150 vocal fans on Facebook, Twitter, and social media, because they can't gauge the true reaction of the fans in the ground.
Yeah.
Jamie? The only thing
I'd say back to that is the last two appointments, well, three if you include Fletcher, they've been very, very light in experience, and they just might have got a little bit burned. And you're right, I think they've taken a lot of the criticism to heart. I mean, there's been a lot of flak flying at Martin Ling for the last best part of 2 years over it. So maybe they've gone down a route, well, you know what, the last time we appointed someone with like championship winning experience, we got promoted. That might be the thinking behind it. I don't blame them for doing that. But then again, they could have appointed Joby with his own staff, a look at the players he wants to keep and bring in, and you could get exactly the same sort of result. I mean, we've said on this show before that when you appoint a manager, it's 25% intuition and 75% luck if it comes off. I mean, there's no magic bullet, but I think the way that the board are looking at it this time is we've had two or three goes at it, and maybe it's time to change tack a bit.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, funny you say that, Billy. I had exactly the same conversation with a couple of people I go to Orient with, and I agree. I think there's, I mean, Nigel Travers has certainly admitted many times that he's a very active on social media as a watcher. If not, perhaps, I'm not quite sure, he writes a tweet every week that says, watch our game at 10 o'clock or £10 for a 3 o'clock game and all that. But he watches social media, and I totally agree with what you're saying. I think there's an element, they're looking through these messages, and there seems to be this reoccurring theme that we have to get somebody with League One and Two experience. And I thought it was a bit bizarre, the statement they came out with, and it specified you must have League One and Two experience. And, you know, it's quite a tenuous concept, because experience in that league, it's such a wide sweeping thing. You could have the worst experience in the world, or you could have a guy who's just gone and won the National League, or just gone and won whatever it may be, a Scottish League or something like that. And it just felt like a very strange thing to write when you're looking for somebody to take over a job. And, you know, going back to the Joby situation, it is a risk, but what I find really strange is, and I found it with a few of the decisions the club has made lately, it's all very reactionary. And I totally understand the people who sit here now and go, look, I don't want Joby as manager next season because X, Y, and Z, he's not got the experience. I totally understand that. And some of the things Jamie just touched on, that, you know, they have tried inexperienced managers with limited success lately. So I totally understand people whose view that is. And I understand those like myself who are like, look, let's give Joby a go. You know, he's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful player. He's great for the club. So I totally get those two points of view. What I can't comprehend is people who decided a few weeks ago that Joby was the right man for the job. He had a couple of bad games with a set of players he didn't choose, half of whom had already been told they were going to leave the club, and then have a U-turn. And to me, it looks like that's what the club's done, because there's some suggestion that Joby was pretty much playing himself into the gig 3 or 4 weeks ago. He loses a few games and suddenly he's tinned after the last game of the season. I can't get my head around that at all. I totally understand both the camps, but I don't see how anyone can put any importance on what's happened over the last few weeks, personally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I count, by the way, when I say like a vocal minority on social media, I include myself on that, because I am very vocal on social media. So I absolutely 100% include myself on that. I'm not blaming people. But do you think this is a bit reactionary from the board, Jamie? And do you think it sets a dangerous precedent?
It's difficult to say. I mean, the thing about Joby, I never really got the feeling that the guys upstairs were 100% behind him to get the job. I mean, if you watch the AGM back on, I think it was the 14th of April, you know, when they asked the question, who's going to be manager next season, Martin Neen just came straight out and said, we don't know. And then, and that was when we were knocking on the door of a playoff place. So it's a difficult one in the sense that the board, I think, want to do the right thing. I mean, they've got these big, ambitious plans for Orient. You can see it. I mean, they're talking about building the academies up again, improving the stadium, you know, getting us to League One within 2 years. So they're talking big, ambitious plans. And
yeah, new investment coming in as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is a really important summer rebuild. Probably the most important one since 2017 when Nigel Travis took over, because it can kind of define the way this club travels in the next 5 years. I mean, I think at the moment we're in quite a reasonably good position to actually exploit it. If we get this right, we could get a whole new fan base in. We can, you know, the ambition is to get an average crowd of 7,000. And, you know, if you've got those ambitions, you've got to have a League One team and a League One manager to get you there. And I think they're actually quite determined to get there, but I'm not quite sure if they know how to do it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Well, let's have a look at some of the candidates then that have been proposed as potential Orient managers. We're lucky enough now, actually, that we're going to hear from one of the candidates who has sent us a video message at 25-1 on BetVictor was Matt Roper, who has sent us this recording. So thank you very much, Matt.
Good evening, Billy and the team. Sorry I can't actually be with you tonight, but I'm busy with my agent finalising my discussions with the O's about becoming the new Orient manager. So if anyone fancies making themselves a few easy quid, then I can still be backed at 25-1 with BetVictor, a price much, much shorter than the 500-1 I was when a certain Italian gentleman was changing managers quicker than some of us were changing our undies. The club want to change the direction, and I'll certainly guarantee that. This season has been a difficult one, but I come with a fresh thinking forward approach that has seen me achieve a 40% win ratio percentage for Corinthian Casuals under 14s, which has led to a playoff final this Sunday. I want us to emulate the Frank Clark sides of the late 80s, fast attacking football that will get you off your seat. And believe you me, I know all about getting off my seat. I want to take the game to the opposition every time we take the field. No more 4-3-3, 4-1-3-2. Just a simple 4-4-2 with no-nonsense defending, two out-and-out wingers with skill and or pace, and balls into the box throughout the 90 minutes. The overriding philosophy will be if we concede two, we will score three, and I'm aiming for a return of 2 points per game to put us firmly in that green zone and automatic promotion. Being a true fan and to help Nigel and Ken save money, I have offered my services for free and just want my Oyster card topped up each month to cover travel expenses to and from training and one of our lovely black cab drivers at the O's to pick me up on a match day. That'll mean they can also tout the story of I had that Matt Roper in the back of my cab the other night. Finally, I'm also looking to recruit my backroom staff. So if there are any coaches, scouts, analysts or physios out there, then please drop Martin Ling a line at the club. Have a great summer, O's fans, and let's get ready for fun and games come August when we'll be back in the grounds to watch our great club in its 140th year make a triumphant return to League One before the real business of putting us properly back on the map and where we haven't been since 1982. Come on, you O's!
And so, that's Matt Roper there, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I'm sold. Jamie?
I'm a bit worried if he's going to take a ride in the black cab. I hope it's not Julian Linnetson's, because I'm not sure what he'll find down the back seat.
Jamie, I hear that he was lining you up as the assistant manager, potentially. Do you fancy Danny Sender's job?
No chance. Not a chance. I don't want anyone bashing at me from behind the dugout with a drum or worse.
He's got nowhere, but we don't care. Striper. No, is that not what?
That's just one of the better ones.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look at some actual candidates then. All right. Coming in number one, the bookie's favourite, Mark Cooper. I mean, are we going to entertain this, Jamie?
Oh, okay. Well, let's put it this way. He could divide opinion before a ball is kicked anyway. I'm looking at his record. His record's okay. He's got 40, 40% win ratio. Where, you know, overall, Forest Green Rovers, quite an attractive side, really. I thought every time we played them, they were miles better in possession than we were. But again, out of work because he's bombed out in the last few weeks of the season. So I think if you take away the controversy with what he's alleged to have said to Ross Embleton, you'd say, well, maybe he's worth chatting to. Just on his win percentage.
I've had three people already text me and say they would not renew their season ticket if Mark Hooper was appointed. OC?
Yeah, I certainly don't agree with that. I mean, I'm sort of inclined to agree more with Jamie's point of view. I mean, it's one of those ones. There was obviously the flare-up with Embleton on the touchline. Nobody quite knows the ins and outs of that. But it was a bit ugly. And he's obviously the kind of character that could get in a fight in an empty room, isn't he, by the sound of it. But maybe the club needs to go down that route. There is an element that I was chatting to one of my mates earlier, who's not an Orient fan, but who sort of follows lower league football quite closely. There's an element that maybe a team like Orient, they've tried a sort of arm around the shoulder type managers for quite a while now. And maybe someone like Mark Cooper is what they need. And it might be ugly and some of the players won't like it. But he did get Forest Green playing some very nice football. When they played us early in the season, we played them in the Cup and the League, didn't we? And I thought they looked like one of the best sides we played. And obviously it went a little bit wonky towards the end, as they have a habit of doing as a team for whatever reason. Maybe it's the lack of meat in the diet or something like that. But they are a pretty side. And I personally think I certainly would have no problem renewing my season ticket. If it might need a manager that says, right, we take 40 seconds over every throw-in when we're a goal up and we sort of do all this, that and the other. And maybe that's what we need. And if we can get Eber Adams to come back to Orient in a deal, then I'm fully on board. And again, he's not Eber Adams. He's not a particularly pleasant character in some ways, but he's a fantastic footballer, and he's exactly what Orient could do with. And if someone said to me, you get Mark Cooper and Eber Adams in the building tomorrow, I'd be ringing up the season ticket renewal line ASAP, personally. But
I'd take Abu Adams back. I don't mind the player being a player on the pitch and doing what they need to do to get their team win. A bit like Luke Guttridge when I gave him stick and then he mugged me off by celebrating in front of me when he scored two goals. I don't mind that, though. If you give it, you got to take it. I don't mind that on the pitch. Not having Cooper at all, though. Absolutely not having Cooper at all, though. All right, let's move on. The next favourite down then was Mitchie Wellens coming in at 4-1. Previous clubs, Swindon and Salford. I'm just putting this out there. He's another one I don't want. And here's the reason why. He got Swindon promoted and then left Swindon in League One to come to Salford in League Two. Salford, a much smaller club than Swindon. Now, look, they're bankrolled. But to me, all that shows is that Richie Wellens is a mercenary and is simply interested in a pound note and not ambitious. Am I being too harsh, Jamie?
I think you might be. I think you've just got also taken into consideration the actual car crash, what's happening at Swindon at the moment, behind the scenes with ownership and finance. So he probably saw it and thought, I'm jumping ship here because this is only going one way. 42% win rate at Swindon, though, and a promotion. And again, they were one of the better sides when we played them the season before last. Could do worse, I think. Is he a mercenary? Is he worse than anybody else, really? He probably just thought, you know, there's a chance of me getting some, you know, a guaranteed income for a few more weeks. And obviously, it never panned out the way he thought it'd do at Salford. But apparently, he plays decent football. Could be worth a punt.
OC, do you think I've maybe got some PTSD from the Bichetti era?
I feel the way I feel. That does feel a little bit harsh. I mean, I think the thing with the Salford gig is it's a higher ceiling than any other club at our level by some way, isn't it? And I think it's probably quite a tough gig for any manager to turn down just because there is so much upside there, not just financially, but in terms of what you could achieve there. So I don't think I'd ever hold it against somebody for taking that gig. I guess it's a bit like when Owen Doyle left Swindon to join Bolton. You know, it felt like a strange thing. But then you look at the size of the club at Bolton and that sort of thing. So I wouldn't hold that against Wellens. I thought he was potentially not realistic for us. He feels like he might, given how many jobs there are out there, I just suspect he might get a slightly better job than the Orient job. But just on his record and what he's achieved, I mean, Swindon played some beautiful football, didn't they, under him? And I'd certainly take him. I just suspect he might get a better gig elsewhere.
So next one on the list, David Flitcroft, coming in at 6-1. Won promotion with Bury, but they were big spenders at the time. Also took Mansfield to the playoffs, but he's currently the director of football at Port Vale. Would he leave a director of football's position to become a manager again? OC, I'll come to you first on this one.
I must admit, he must be the most boring name on the list for me. I remember him as a player, and he was a massively boring player, wasn't he, for Man City? Just one of those like, nothing midfielders. And I don't know much about his management. I must admit, I wouldn't pretend to know too much about his management style or the like, but he just feels like a very boring option, and he'd be right near the bottom of my list, personally, right next to Colin Caldwell, I think.
Jamie?
Two directors of football at Orient. I can't see it myself. I know he's got a little bit of success at Bury, but I can't see it being working for us, really. I can't see us sort of being on our radar, to be quite honest.
Okay. Now, here's the next one down is one that actually I've mentioned before that I wouldn't mind seeing at Orient, which is John McGreal. Now, although he's not got any promotions on his CV, he did take Colchester to the playoffs. And much as people will look at Colchester and say, well, they didn't get promoted and they had a really poor season, when they got into the playoffs, he was then a lot of the players in that team were told before the playoffs even started that they weren't going to have their contracts renewed. So they kind of took the thunder from underneath him, as it were, pulled the rug from underneath him before he'd even got a chance in the playoffs. Jamie, what do you think on that one?
Interesting one. I did a little bit of checking up, as you do. 37% win ratio. Likes to play a 4-2-3-1, which is what Joby was playing in the last two games. Could be interesting. And also a little bit of a dark horse, I think. So, I don't know. Again, I think he's only managed in League Two. So if you're going strictly by the criteria the board set out, League One and Two experience, but then again, we don't know. So yeah, it might be worth putting a crafty tenner or fiver on, but we'll have to wait and see.
I'll bet responsibly. and also, I mean, if he does come along, I'd love to see him bring Harry Pell with him as well.
Oh, yes.
I think that would be a hell of a signing for us. So OC, any insights into John McGreal?
Harry Pell's actually the best mate of, I don't know how much I can say about this, but he's the best mate of the guy sitting next to at work. And I don't think he's going to be coming to Orient. I don't know about that. But John McGreal was, again, the same sort of link, but I think he was supposedly potentially interested in the job when it first came up, when Joby was offered it. That was one rumour that was going around on the grapevine, wasn't it? So I think he sounds like one of the more plausible ones. Look at what's happened to Colchester since he left, and it suddenly puts his achievements at Colchester in a much better light. They've gone off a cliff since he left. I don't know whether there's a lot going on behind the scenes at Colchester, isn't there? The sort of debt they're in and all that sort of thing. But he's obviously, presumably, he has been based locally and he seems well liked by the players at Colchester. So he feels to me like one of the most likely names on the list. Certainly of the ones that we've mentioned so far, for sure.
Jamie, I'm going to come to you for the next one then, because I know you've been banging the drum about this one on Twitter. Go for it.
Oh, Kenny Jackett.
Kenny Jackett, yes.
Well, I wouldn't say banging the drum, but what I am saying is I think we should at least make the call, don't you? He's got a 42% win rate, 51% at Pompey, 3 promotions, has done the director of football gig, by the way. I just think, you know, I know people say unrealistic, Billy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's in dreamland.
Let's define unrealistic. Okay.
So unrealistic for me is the fact that the clubs he's managed, the Swansea, Millwall, Wolves and Portsmouth, who are miles bigger clubs than us, and he hasn't managed in League Two for over a decade.
Yeah. But, and again, there's no magic bullet and there's no guarantee, even if we did appoint him, it would come off. But he ticks all the boxes. He ticks all the boxes on what the board have been saying. He's got 3 promotions on his CV. You know, he can run a club. He's not a nutcase. And I just think if we'd appointed him, it actually says, well, we're serious.
Look, if we got him, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I wouldn't want Kenny Jackett in any way, shape or form. I think that would be the most exciting managerial appointment we've had since I've been going to watch the club. If I'm brutally honest, I just cannot see why he would come to the Orient. When you look at the other jobs that are going to be out there this summer, right? Why would he come to us? There's bigger teams that are going to be looking for managers this summer. And when you look at, I know people will say, well, Justin Edinburgh dropped down to two divisions to come and manage us. But Justin Edinburgh was coming off of the back of two poor jobs with Northampton and Gillingham. So he was almost rebuilding his career at that level. I just don't see Jackett as having to rebuild. He's got a reputation there. I see him going to a Championship or a League One club. OC?
Yeah, I suppose the same. So I certainly would like to see him. He's got all the credentials, but it does feel slightly unrealistic. I suppose the only thing, you know, one thing Orient has got going for is it is, I know a lot of fans say this about their clubs, but Orient is a bit of a sleeping giant at that level. They're relatively secure financially, much more so than most clubs at that level. They're in an area of the country that a lot of people would like to sort of be based in. So I guess there are a lot of reasons why you could perhaps attract a higher calibre of manager than your average League Two club could do. Whether that stretches as far as someone like Jackett or Richie Wellens or someone like that, I don't know. But I guess all you can do is make the call. But I certainly agree with Jamie that if it was an option, it's an option I think we'd like to pursue. Whether it is an option, I've no idea, really.
Jamie, if you're Travis, how are you selling the club to Jackett then?
I'd just say we've got new investment. We're building, hopefully, a young, attractive team. We'd like you to come on board and do it. You've got the experience to get us where we want to go. I think for someone like Kenny Jackett, it would be worth a listen to what we've got to say. I mean, let's be honest, we're not Barnet. We're an established London side with, you know, potential. I know Barry Hearn hates that word potential, but I think we have. And, you know, if Nigel Travis said, come on board and join the project, get us to where we want to go, I think we've got half a chance. But then, you know, like you said, you know, there's obviously bigger jobs and bigger clubs out there. But I think at his stage of his career, I think it might be worth a go. I've got a real feeling that he'd say, yeah.
Now, I know that. So here's another thing to consider as well. Do we think Kenny Jackett would work under a director of football? Is one question. And does this also go to the question where that was mentioned to Nigel Travis the other day when he said, well, if the right manager wants the job but says they won't work under a director of football, Martin's role name could be changed, if that makes sense. Is he that manager? I know he used the example of Jose Mourinho, but the point I'm making is he a big enough name that if he said yes, I'll come and manage the first team, but I'm not doing it under a director of football. Do the board then make that decision and Martin then carries on in his role doing the other stuff, the academy, the women's first team, the women's academy, and all those bits and pieces that he does, because it's such a huge job that he does, but he doesn't do the first team anymore. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they go for it. I think if Nigel Travis and also the new finances coming in, possibly new directors, if they're looking for like a name or someone to push this club forward, I think Nigel Travis will go for it. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And you know, no one's saying Ling's done this terrible job. I think a lot of the stuff that's come Ling's way is a little bit unfair, because the director of football only becomes an issue when the first team aren't doing well.
Oh, massively, massively. And it's incredible. Like, oh, Martin Ling's picking the team. Okay, well, he's released Sam Ling today. Oh, well, he's not picking that part of the team, but he's doing everything. And it's just like, come on, get a grip, you know?
Also, it might do Martin Ling a favour. It might do Martin Ling a favour. Then, you know, he can concentrate on all the other stuff that Nigel and the board want to do, like soccer camps and developing the academy and pushing our name forward in Europe and America. And then whoever comes in takes over the role with the first team, full stop. So I think eventually it'll be a win-win. I think like we've been in the same sort of setup for 4 years. It's got us out of the National League, but I think it's got to start evolving now. I think the whole setup at Orient's got to start evolving so that we're becoming a serious league team that's ambitious. I know it's a dirty word, but I think we need to show a bit of ambition to the supporters, they've stuck by us through thick and thin for a long, long time. I mean, the last like 5 or 6 years has had a lot of up and down. And I think it would just be nice to look forward to getting back to the ground, hopefully in August, with a new team and like really, really ready to go and push this club forward, but hopefully into League One and maybe beyond.
Okay, well, there's a few more names on the list. Let's see if any of those tickle your fancy, shall we say. Phil Parkinson, promotions with Colchester, Bradford and Bolton. For me, I think this would be a decent enough. I think this would be a decent appointment. He's a London boy. Would he come though, OC?
Yeah, to echo what you said, really, Billy. I think everything about him suggests it'd be a good appointment. Whether he dropped down to this level, like he potentially might have some slightly bigger suitors. But no, I agree. He's certainly one I would be interested in. Were he available?
Jamie, I had a fan tweet me the other day and was adamant. This is one of our, I'm not even going to mention his name because I'm not going to give him kudos on the radio, but one of our many, we must have an experienced manager fans, was touting Neil Ardley.
Interesting one. Just looked up his win ratio percentage and it says here 35%, which is probably like one of the lowest of the people we're talking about, but one promotion. I don't know. I just think he's a bit Wimbledon centric, if you know what I mean. He was a player there, you know, gotten promoted, kept him up for quite a while. I don't know if he's for us.
When you actually look at his record in depth, I was not impressed at all. When he had 4 or 5 seasons at Wimbledon, he had one good season where he got unpromoted, and the rest of them, he finished in the league like 15th, 18th, 15th, 14th. His one good season was when he found Lyle Taylor, who basically fired them to promotion and then kept them up the following season. And then once Lyle Taylor went, they went back to pot. So not overly happy about this one at all. Colin Calderwood. Won promotions with both Northampton and Nottingham Forest. We know that him and Martin Ling are friends in outside of the game. Jamie, two promotions.
Two promotions, and throughout his career, almost a 40% win rate. So, going by that, yeah, if Calderwood was appointed, be prepared for Twitter to explode about 30 seconds after it's announced.
I think the one thing that goes against Calderwood is he's had no success since 2008. OC?
Yeah, he wouldn't be for me. He's another one. It's probably completely irrelevant, but I remember him as a player and he was like a proper old-fashioned sort of Scottish centre-half, wasn't he? And he just wouldn't be. It would be a very uninspiring appointment for me, particularly having just lost a man like Joby McEnough. I think you need someone with a bit more charisma than that, really. Just wouldn't be my choice, personally.
Chris Powell has also been mentioned in passing. A few people said they would be interested in appointing him. Did win promotion with Charlton in 2014, but was poor at Southend. Now, obviously, is it fair to judge him? Because we know the monetary issues they've got there. We know that the restraints they're currently under. But at the moment, he's currently the assistant manager at Tottenham. Now, we know that there's going to be a new manager going in there at the end of the season, so that job might not be secure. But Jamie, do you think, would he drop down? Would we want him to?
I think the only way he'd probably consider it if he got bombed out at Tottenham, and it's also part of the England setup. So all depends what happens over the summer. And you know, by the time that's all arranged, we'll probably have a new manager in place anyway. I can't see it this time around. If you asked me 5 or 6 years ago, I'd have said yeah, bite your hand off. But I'm not sure. I'm not sold.
Now, here's the last one on the list, and this one isn't actually on the bookies list. This is just one that, for me, this is the manager that I would go for, and it was Keith Hill. Sacked by Tranmere yesterday, despite the fact that they are in the playoffs. You know, we think Orient is a shambles sometimes, but flipping hell, what are you doing there? He's got Rochdale into the playoffs twice, and he's also won 2 automatic promotions. You know, so he's got a track record. He's had 3 teams in the three times he's been in the playoffs. Twice he's got automatic promotions. That's who I would go for, Keith Hill. But he's a northern guy. Would he come down south to London? What do we think, OC?
I mean, the obvious worry with him is what the response to his dismissal at Tranmere, isn't it? And why they sacked somebody who got them in the playoffs. And I was just when he first got tinned by Tranmere, I immediately thought the same as you, Billy, and thought, oh, he could be an ideal candidate for the Orient job. And then you click on the Tranmere announcement, you look at all the responses to it, and it's absolutely scathing. It sounds like he lost the dressing room. He started slating the players in the press, slating the fans, and blah, blah, blah. And the sort of suggestion was that they, you know, they started off very brightly under his management, and then they went off a cliff towards the end of the season, sort of threw away a chance to get automatic promotion. And I guess for a manager to get sacked, having just got his team into a playoff, given the position they were in earlier in the season, you know, to an outsider, to us, it looks like he's done a fantastic job there and he's just lost his job. But there's got to be a reason for that. And the fact that the club has suddenly wholesale turned against him rings alarm bells a little bit for me.
Okay, Jamie?
Yeah, I'll go along with what OC says there. I smell a large rat there, to be quite honest. If you just made the playoffs and decided, actually, mate, we don't need to take us any far forward, the alarm bells would be ringing.
Well, I want him. Keith, come to the Orient. Okay, so that finishes our roundup of potential managers. Hopefully, we'll hear some news soon. Whoever is appointed, I will back them, unless it's Mark Cooper. But anyone else, I will be behind them. And hopefully, they have a good season and up the mighty O's. All right, so we move on then, because we also heard about the released and the retained list today from the Orient. So players that have been released from the club, Lee Angle, Josh Coulson, James Dayton, Louis Dennis, Miles Judd, Sam Ling, Jordan Maguire Drew, Brendan Shabani, Jamie Turley, and Joe Widdowson. Jamie, any surprises on there for you or anyone you would have offered a contract to?
No real surprises. I think that Joe Widdowson maybe could have just counted up a touch unlucky, but I think what probably did for him is that we've got Shadrach Ogie coming through, and they've still got, well, they're offering terms to
Jane Sweeney.
Brophy. So I think that, you know, that's probably about the only one you could say, well, he's a little bit unlucky there. But all the rest of them, I think they've all had their moments. I mean, we'll never forget what Josh Coulson did. And, you know, Jordan Maguire Drew, again, he's had his moments, and Joby's retired. But I just think it's a season a little bit too far for some of these guys.
OC?
Yeah, I think I echo most of what Jamie said. I mean, I would have kept Sam Ling. I mean, I know it would probably mean I'll never come on his show again, judging by the reaction to this sort of comment.
I agree with you. I like Sam Ling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's necessarily a first-choice fullback, but I think he's had quite a good season. He's young. Touchwood, he keeps himself relatively fit. I think I would have probably kept him. I agree Widdowson was sort of a bit borderline. I could certainly see the case of keeping Widdowson. Jordan Maguire Drew is a player I really, really like, but I must admit, I think I've been proved wrong having seen what's happened to him at Crawley. I was very much in the camp that we should never have let him go to Crawley, and I really like the guy. I personally having one on the first day of the team sheet, but having seen what's happened at Crawley, it looks very similar to what seems to happen at every club he goes to, including us. So there must be something going on behind the scenes there, whether he just doesn't put it in training or whatever it is, I don't know. But I think we've just got to give that project up. And the only other one that was a bit of a sort of funny one was Louis Dennis, I guess, because he did sort of show quite a bit at the end of the season. And he is a sort of player that you can play anywhere across the front line. I think maybe with Louis Dennis, he's one of these players that if you could wave a magic wand and say that he's definitely going to be fit for an entire season, you might give him a contract. But he does have a lot of niggling injury problems, and he probably isn't quite good enough to justify a contract, given that he doesn't seem to stay fit for long enough, you know. So no real complaints apart from perhaps Sam Ling, really.
I think to me, I mean, I do think one thing I will say about Sam Ling is that whilst I would have kept him as I'm not necessarily as a first choice right back, I think he's a good squad player. I think it will do his career good to actually be away from his dad. And I think it will actually do Martin Ling good as well to not have that pressure of his son being in the squad as well at the same time. So maybe it is the best for all parties. And maybe that's kind of partially why the decision's been made. Jamie?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's done both of them a bit of a favour, really. It's one less stick to beat both of them with. And I think Sam Ling's never really come over as a brilliant fullback, but he's never been as bad as people make out.
No, he's a solid lower league right back, isn't he?
Yeah, no problem.
Obviously, going back to what you said about Louis Dennis, I mean, Louis Dennis to me is the sort of player that looks amazing on the beach when you go on holiday, but yet when you put him on an 11-a-side pitch, can't quite do it. Am I being harsh, Jamie?
No. Sorry, I think that's probably right, Billy. I mean, I would have certainly said that sort of if you'd have asked me that 2 or 3 months ago. I remember when he first came to Orient, the first game he ever had, I can't recall who it was against. It was at Brisbane Road, and he came on, I think, and he looked absolutely magic. He pulled out a few lollipops, beat a couple of men. I thought, we've just signed Neymar. I couldn't believe it. And sure enough, it all went wonky. He's another player that seems to, you know, whatever reason, wherever he's gone, it's kind of started brightly and fizzled out a little bit. And then he obviously had his problems, his injury problems, or whatever it might be. But then I think the last probably the last quarter of the season, he's been one of the few bright spots. And I totally agree that even then, he wasn't exactly knocking the lights out. And I can't say I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but I think they're probably, if we're looking at players on that list, if you were at another club, maybe at a slightly lower level in Orient that you might look to pick up, I'd certainly be looking to sign Louis Dennis for a club, certainly National League level, or maybe a club with slightly lower ambitions in League Two. And I'd put Sam Ling in that bracket as well, for sure. So I think it's more a case, they're players that were I looking at it from outside as a potentially players to pick up on a free, I'd be interested in Sam Ling and Louis Dennis for sure, and perhaps Joe Widdowson. Not so much most of the others.
Jamie, do you think Jamie Turley was unlucky with regards to injuries? Do you think that's what's curtailed his Orient career and meant he's not been offered a new deal?
Yeah, I think so. He came in, actually, it was quite strange when Joby McInniff was first made manager, and he was one of the first players he brought back in. In fact, he dropped Dan Happy to bring him back. And I think for the most part, apart from the nightmare against Cambridge, I thought he shored us up. You know, it wasn't, you know, spectacular, but it was just good old-fashioned, you know, sturdy League Two defending. And he made a big difference to us. I think you're right. I think the injury problems he's had in the past has probably worked against him. But, you know, on maybe if he'd have started more games this season, he would have got an offer. But I think he may be slightly unlucky, but again, like OC says, there'll be clubs out there who'll pick him up. They'll see what he's done, and he can do a job for people.
Well, anyway, best wishes to all of those players that have been released from the Orient. Thank you for your service to the club. We do appreciate it, even if it hasn't worked out for you. Best wishes with the rest of your careers. And as we mentioned earlier on, best wishes to Joby in his retirement. With regards to new contracts then, so the following players were offered new deals. James Brophy, Craig Clay, Dan Happy, Danny Johnson, Jaden Sweeney, Lawrence Figueroa and Connor Wilkinson. So Jaden Sweeney and James Brophy being offered new deals. We also have Shadrack Ogie. Jamie, do you think that is almost suggesting that James Brophy will be used further forward next year?
We can never tell, really. But you'd hope that we'd try and get a little bit more out of him offensively next season. I mean, it was quite frustrating on Saturday. We were 2-0 down, and first thing we did when we made our substitutions was put him back to left back. And you kind of think, well, you know, if we really want to try and, you know, get back in this game, he's not going to really do much at left back when you should be attacking their defence. So I'd like to see him try and develop his game a bit more. I think he's trying to work his right foot a bit more over the last few weeks. I've actually seen him use it 2 or 3 times. So there's definitely cause for optimism in the Brophy. But again, it's, you know, does he want to stay? That's the thing. I mean, we've made these offers. It doesn't necessarily mean that they want to stay or they've not got better offers elsewhere.
OC, of the ones we've offered deals to, who do you think will stay and who do you want to stay? Is there anyone that you're surprised we offered a deal to?
I mean, I hate to just keep coming on here and every time I come on here bash the same player, but I've never been a big fan of Craig Clay.
I knew you were going to say that.
I know. I mean, I know. He's just not for me. I think he's a player that divides opinion. And I love the guy. His attitude is fantastic. And I totally understand what he brings to a team in terms of his attitude and his work ethic and all the rest of it. But I just think technically as a footballer, he's a long way off the pace at this level. I must admit, I thought he was a bit off the pace at times in the National League campaign. And that's probably, some people will be horrified to hear me say that, but a few games in the conference where I thought he was a weak link. And I certainly think at this level, he's not technically up to this level. So I'm surprised he's been offered a new deal, for all that I love everything about him in terms of his attitude and what he brings to the club as a man. I can't imagine Wilkinson and Vigra are going to stay, unfortunately. I would certainly think Vigra is going to get a gig higher than League Two. And I think Wilkinson has shown enough now that he deserves a contract somewhere in League One, I'd have thought. I mean, I get an impression of Wilkinson, I don't know, but he looks like the sort of player that probably his attitude held him back a bit when he was a youngster at Millwall and at Bolton. And he sort of came to Dagenham and then to Orient a little bit sort of damaged goods on the attitude from what I've heard sort of anecdotally. But technically, he is a very good footballer, I think, and he certainly deserves a chance at a higher level for me. And I think maybe Danny Johnson might leave just because we were dropping him towards the end of the season, which made me think perhaps he's told us that he's not going to stay and perhaps he wants to go back up north. I'm not convinced he's any better than the League Two player, but I think he'll obviously get a contract in League Two for sure. And I just suspect he might prefer to go back up north. So I'm sort of resigned to losing those three. I personally wouldn't have offered Craig Clay a new contract. And apart from that, it all feels about right, really. I guess there's a possibility Dan Happy might... I think Dan Happy, we all were resigned to losing him at the end of this contract a few months ago, but there's been a lot of water under the bridge since then. And I think anyone that's been watching him over the last few months, it'd be very hard to sign him any level higher than League Two. But I still think... He's a funny one, Dan Happy. I still think there's a player there. He's just undone by his lack of mobility and pace. But I think if you put him... When he was playing alongside Marv, I think he had a player alongside him who complimented him because Marv was mobile, he was agile, he had pace, they suited one another. And when Happy was playing alongside Turley, at times it just... looked like something down Hackney Marshes, and Turley's obviously leading, and I've never been a massive fan of Turley. Again, as a player, I mean, I just think he's so bad on the ball that you get found out at that level for all that he's a half-decent defender. So I think if we could find a pacey, mobile centre-half to play alongside Happy, I still think Happy could be a fantastic player for Orient personally, but you'd be hard-pressed to say that having watched him over the last few months.
You know, I was going to say that. I mean, I must admit, I agree with you about Craig Clay. I personally wouldn't have offered Clay a deal. I, again, echo everything you said. I think he's a great person, as in so much. I cannot fault his work ethic in any game. It's just the overall quality that lets him down. I think Dan Happy's lucky to be offered a deal, if I'm honest with you. I know he's one of our own, and I hate to say that because, I think there's potential. There is a player in there. But I think his performances, the back end of the season, have been poor. Jamie, am I being harsh?
No, I totally agree. I mean, Lawrence Vigra, who got him out of jail 2 weeks running with penalty saves after he'd given the penalty away. So, yeah, look, it's not been a great season for him. Again, he's only young. I think he's only 22 years old. But like we said last time we were on the show, maybe he's come to the point where he needs a move to further his career. I mean, and it might even do... Or in a favour in a way that means we've got to go out and recruit three new centre halves at least. So, yeah, it's not been a great season for him. I think if it was anybody else, I think he'd have been released with people like Turley. So,
I mean, part of me does wonder whether we've offered Happy a new deal, because then if anyone else does come in for him, they'd have to pay for him.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Obviously he's come for our youth team. So if they offer him a better deal than we have, they would have to pay a compensation fee to us because we've obviously... So part of me wonders whether it's to do with that. That's the reason we've offered him a deal. You know, as I say, I think there's a player in there. I do think that he has potential to play League Two and above it. But just this season, he's just... I don't know. He hasn't kicked on, I would say.
So. I think it's quite a big... Just quickly, Billy, I think it is quite a big call to release someone like him for nothing, just because the upside is there. You know, he at times he has looked like a really solid League Two defender. And I think if he'd have asked any of us this question a year ago, we'd have all been sort of pretty much resigned to losing him to a better level of football. So I think it is a big call to lose someone like him for nothing. But I do totally agree with what you and Jamie have said, that he has been shocking the last few weeks.
Okay, so last question then before we go, because we're coming towards the end of the show now. If you could keep one of DJ or Wilkinson, who do you keep? Jamie, coming to you first.
Connor Wilkinson.
Why is that?
I think there's more to his game, and I think there's more to come from him. I think some of Connor, you've just got to get him to believe in himself. I'm sure he can play point striker for us, but I don't think he fully believes he can. But he's definitely got the attributes. He's two-footed, got a great strike on him, can put himself about. I'd definitely try and keep him. Not too sure about DJ. I mean, he had a great spell at finishing, but he's just been a little anonymous since he's been back.
I see.
Yeah, totally agree with Jamie. I've no-brainer for me. I think Connor Wilkinson's a wonderful player to watch at our level. There's very few players in the league who have got the natural ability that he's got, and you can play him probably anywhere across the front line. And I mean, I'd love to keep both, but I get the impression potentially that DJ's not sort of totally settled down south as well. And no, if I could had to choose one, it would be Connor Wilkinson all day long.
Okay, fair enough. I am going to disagree with you both there, and I would keep DJ. He's a goal scorer. You know, to me, Wilco's a centre forward. He doesn't want to play centre forward. So I would keep DJ. I would get a lump to go alongside him, and I would get two wide men, stick balls in the box, and, you know, hey presto, that's us winning the league. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time.
You've got the job, Billy.
Yeah, me right behind Matt Roper. I'll be there with the drum. Yes. Thanks for your time tonight. Really, really appreciate it. All the best. Have a good week. Thank you for listening, everybody. And hopefully you enjoy the pre-season. We have a hell of a lot of pre-season things coming up for you. Some special interviews and stuff, including this Saturday when we will release part two of the 2006 promotion special. So keep an eye out for that on our Twitter page. But otherwise, we will see you hopefully, or some of you in person, back at Brisbane Road in the new season. All the best, everybody. Take care.
This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause there's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orienteer, it's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, cause it's an up to pop. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. It's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup semi in 78. We had John Sitter, that is most irate. We were club reviler, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment Lee still scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I want to hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. A wrong postcode in eyes at the bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. So come on, Oriel, it's half past four. I'll stay till the end if I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause it's St. Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10.